It's The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. You know, if you think back to the fevered press coverage of the Ebola virus, you might think it was the first time that an outbreak has driven ratings and opportunism in the media. But take a trip back nearly 300 years to Boston in 1721 and witness an ambitious newspaper editor named James Franklin, who identified opportunity in the politicized outbreak of a disease. It was the speckled monster, smallpox. Of the town's 11,000 residents, over 6,000 cases of smallpox were reported in 1721, 850 deaths. Now, at the heart of that chaos and destruction was a cover-up. Governor Samuel Shute knew that sailors entering the harbor were infected, but similar to what we've seen in Flint, Michigan, the governor was accused of failing to act. Stephen Koss is the author of The Fever of 1721, the epidemic that revolutionized medicine and American politics. Koss argues that some good actually came out of that failure. In health, there was the development of smallpox inoculation. And politically, the episode paved the way for the Revolutionary War.
The way I found out was that I got a fact-a-day calendar for my wife and kids a long time ago, and I was thumbing through it looking for interesting facts. And saw this event. The central event of my book is a smallpox outbreak and inoculation experiment, which became the first use of inoculation in the West. And I'd never heard of it. I also saw from that one little page that it was very controversial, that the doctor who was attempting it had his life threatened, and that Cotton Mather, whom I'd only known from Salem, was the person who got the doctor to try inoculation. So I was hooked, and I did a lot of research and realized, indeed, that it did change the course of medical history, but there was also a big political hullabaloo going on at the same time.
So then you have Cotton Mather, who, as you said, was already known even at the time to people because of the Salem witch trials, which had taken place a couple of decades before. One of the interesting points in your book is that Cotton Mather learned about the potential for inoculation from a slave who said that this was done routinely in West Africa.
That's true. That's true. As it turns out, inoculation, which was new to Western medicine, certainly in Europe and England and in America, had been practiced at least for decades, if not longer, in parts of Africa, and even longer in Turkey and parts of the Middle East and parts of Asia. So the way Mather stumbled upon it himself was he actually had this conversation with his slave, who he named Onesimus. He asked Onesimus why he had this odd scar on his arm. And Onesimus proceeded to tell him that, well, everybody in my village back in Africa has this, that when smallpox came, they would perform this operation on people who had not had it, and they would live. They would not die from smallpox. Mather kept that in his mind, and then several months later, he stumbled upon a second example in a journal, a scholarly journal. And when he saw that second sort of confirmation of Onesimus, he was convinced that it would work.
So Mather kind of joins forces with a local doctor. They decide, hey, let's try inoculation. That's the medicine part of it. And I think we all understand where that goes eventually, the promise of inoculation. But then the politics. There was an opportunist who was part of all of this, somebody who was political, who had a newspaper, who was against inoculation and spotted, I think, what you could call an open political opportunity to make a name for himself.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it was. And that man was James Franklin. And we all know James Franklin's little brother, Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin and James were thrown together by their dad. Neither one of them was very happy about it. But it turned out to be enormously beneficial for both of them. I mean, in Benjamin, James had not only a really good printer, but also, as it turns out, a contributor. And he and Benjamin opened a shop in 1718 and struggled to make a living because there were already a lot of printers. And so James got it in his head that he could create content and that therefore he could create a demand for what he printed. He wanted a newspaper that was literate and that was political and that was a little controversial and that was funny. When the inoculation controversy started over smallpox inoculation, James saw his opportunity. And I say that Benjamin Franklin learned everything he ever needed to know, he learned in 1721. And what I mean by that is, you know, he learned about how to be a printer and how to succeed in business from his brother, who had very innovative methods. But he also learned about medicine. You know, he saw the inoculation controversy up close. He also learned about politics because James Franklin was reprinting an essay series called Cato's Letters, which established a lot of the basic principles that the founding fathers would use many decades later. And of course, Benjamin Franklin was one of them. So this was an enormously important and mutually beneficial relationship.
So there's lots of threads to this that eventually lead to where we all know this is going, which is the American Revolution. But let's bring it forward to the current day, because this interaction between politics and health crises is something that's familiar to us, Stephen Kos. This happens all the time in the context, let's say, of vaccination, inoculation. It's a compromise between liberty and the greater good. And we see this debate playing out today, anti-science, anti-data, but still kind of asserting individual freedom in our American society.
Right. And I think, you know, what's interesting about 1721 is you get a sense for how great the stakes were. I mean, smallpox was the deadliest disease in history. It had killed about, a tenth of all mankind. It's an incredible statistic. There was a desperation to do something about it. And so when inoculation came along, it was very compelling, just as today we're compelled to protect our children. At that point, the pressure went almost in the opposite direction. You were pressured not to get inoculated versus maybe today when the pressure is more on getting vaccinations. But the same basic paradigm existed.
So what does this episode teach us about when health crises get politicized? I mean, think back to maybe how you observed the reaction to the Ebola crisis. We go through this periodically still.
Yes, we do. It's a tension between wanting to be safe and not having hysteria. And in fact, that was a big problem in 1721. One of the reasons the smallpox epidemic burgeoned, was allowed to grow, was that the government actually tried to repress it, which is also a problem these days. You know, we hear about maybe in Brazil with Zika, and some people would say in Flint, even with the water crisis there, that the government, for economic reasons and or political reasons, wants to hope that everything will just be okay. And what happened in Boston was exactly that. The government had warning that smallpox was coming. It could have acted. It didn't act for a variety of reasons, mostly economic and political, and the result was catastrophic.
That also made fertile ground for the type of incendiary politics that James Franklin and his little brother Benjamin capitalized on.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the smallpox epidemic became a leverage point for the bigger political battle that was going on in Boston at this very time between the royal governor and the Massachusetts House of Representatives. The governor thought he was losing power. He didn't want to lose power because that would mean he'd be recalled by England. His way of doing it was to basically take the Massachusetts House and hold them hostage in an area rife with smallpox, trying to get them to capitulate. And it failed.
Stephen Kos is the author of The Fever of 1721, the epidemic that revolutionized medicine and American politics. Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.